Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of The Wine Growers, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And it's July.
And it's July, which is
crazy. How did that happen? I know.
This always happens, though.
It does. I know. I'm like, oh, it's April. But yeah. Now it's July.
Yeah. It's true. Months just melt away.
Literally, because it's summer. Do you like that?
Yeah.
Ta-da.
Okay, so tell me
Jeff, the producer, loves that.
I know. How many hot dogs did you eat? he also wanted to know that.
I know.
How many hot dogs did you eat, and what was your time eating them?
Five, 30 seconds? No.
Wow.
You know, we don't really do hot dogs for the 4th. It's more like burgers, chicken, steak, maybe upgraded a little bit. So, yeah. How about you?
I would agree. I think hot dog really is a baseball park
thing. Yeah, I was going to say it's a park thing. Not that I don't love hot dogs. I mean, when I go to the Giants games, like, that's a must.
Oh, yes.
You have to get the hot dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't need any of the elevated. I want the hot dog.
Hot dog and
really a glass of Pinot Noir.
Sonoma County wine. Yes.
Some Pinot Noir would be amazing with that, or even Chardonnay.
Maybe a beer chaser.
What? What's this beer? I don't even know what that is.
Garlic fries.
Garlic fries, yes. Yeah. I mean, yes.
The whole thing.
Thank you. Thank you, Gordon Biersch.
Yeah. I know. Garlic fries are delicious. That's true.
Okay, so no hot dogs, but other elevated elevated fare.
As long as there's good wine, I'm fine with everything.
It's all that really matters. Food, what's food?
Yeah.
Wine
is food. I like that. Yeah, so we've been continuing our travel back to back Aspen trips. Thanks for asking. Oh, wait, did you not? Did you like how I set that up?
You saw my, hidden note?
I did.
Please talk about Aspen.
Yes. Well, since you asked now, I wouldn't want to leave you hanging.
Mm.
Our team's been to Aspen twice in June. The Food and Wine Aspen Classic happened a couple weeks ago, which was super fun. We were the partner for the Top of the Mountain party, which is like the big last bash on Friday night, the publisher's party. So always enjoy that. And then super fun is we were invited. We've talked a lot about this on the show around our Ford Pro collaboration and partnership with Ford Motor Company. And we were invited, Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, at the Aspen Ideas Festival, which I had never been to the Aspen Ideas Festival. Launched a new platform for Ford Motor Company called the Essential Economy, really looking at the role Ford and other, I guess, essentially companies play in the essential economy. And obviously agriculture is part of the essential economy.
Yes, very much.
Not a surprise. So we discussed a little, put a highlight sort of on our collaboration and the role of agriculture and electric vehicles and regular vehicles sort of moving forward. And then we got to host several CEOs and executives at a reception afterwards pouring Sonoma County wine. So, and got to go to the Ideas Festival. So that was super fun. I know.
So much to think about.
I know.
At an Ideas Festival.
Well, it's kind of great that you have these speakers. So you have journalists, you literally have pop stars and others that are on stage talking about kind of in panel and others about just big kind of topics, very forward looking. And it's always nice to kind of hear from other industries and sort of pull out little nuggets that help shape and innovate and inspire what we could do with wine and what we can do in Sonoma County. So,
and any other farmers on the stage, any other insights from the different agricultural sectors? I mean, it's so, there's a lot going on in the world.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. No, not in particular that of the ones we went to, but I think there's an opportunity for more ag integration at the Ideas Festival.
Absolutely.
So we'll add that to our to-do list.
Okay, yeah.
For next year.
I mean, I was just say, the John Deere brand is so universal. You just see it all over the world, and it's pretty amazing.
John Deere, Ford, everything, I know.
Yep.
And, yeah. And we're hosting speaking of John Deere, hosting their head of ag engineering and their leadership team at the end of the month. So they're going to come in here and do their sort of strategic planning meeting in Sonoma County Wine Country and then meet a bunch of our farmers, which is great. So love when our partners come and we get a really integrated experience to talk about how we better work together and how John Deere, a company like that, can use its resources to support our local farmers.
Yeah. And they love to come for the wine.
They love to come for the wine.
And the food.
And the
food. Weather.
And the experience and the beauty.
And being here.
And the hospitality, frankly,
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
Know, all of that.
So. All right. Well, we are going to be back in just a minute to introduce our guest on today's Good Stuff. Stick around. Joining us on today's Good Stuff in Studio, our guest is Andrea Robinson, Master Woo-woo. Sommelier, chef, television personality, and author. And I think it keeps going from there, but I'm going to stop and say...
We might need more than an hour for this show, right?
Okay, yeah. I mean, we better get into it. So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. I love being with you guys.
Well... I mean, gosh, we have, we've known each other a long time, Andrea.
Yes, since we were 11. Not quite. But yeah. When you think of how many years of the wine
like
industry we've known each other.
Is there wine years?
Yeah.
Like dog years?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I like
definitely,
that.
Definitely.
I'm going to have to think about
several
that.
Several vintages, let's just say.
That'd be a fun social media campaign. What are your wine, what, how old are you in wine years?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, if you
like it,
count
I like
all
it, right?
the hemispheres, like yeah, you could do that.
You could totally.
Okay, there you go.
Add that to the list. All right.
Exactly.
We started the show by talking about how many hot dogs we consume for 4th of July. So today's all just about really fun social ideas.
Yeah, we're a little loopy. Let's just be honest with each other. All right. So let's start at the beginning. Where are you from, and how'd you get into wine?
Oh, gosh, where I'm from is I was born in North Dakota, and I grew up in Texas and Indiana.
Yay, Dakotas!
Yes, and you do need two of those. And yes, I'm from the
Since
northern
I was from
one.
South Dakota, so we're representing the Dakotas today.
Represented.
In studio.
Is there a rivalry between the Dakotas? Is this what I'm sensing?
Not so much.
No.
It's just that people say, why do we need two of them?
Yeah.
And we're like, we do.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's
kinda
a little
like,
bit of a...
Kind of like the Carolinas, you know.
Yeah.
Like, don't lump us in necessarily.
Right.
But
yeah.
neighboring goodness. So, so I got into wine actually in Texas. I was studying finance and economics at SMU in Dallas and took a wine class at a local restaurant called The Grape. And
subtle.
Yeah. Very, yeah. It was.
I wonder what we do here.
Truth in advertising on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually taught by a woman who was Texas' first female sommelier, Rebecca Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
Who was the Dallas Morning News wine editor at the time.
Wow.
And I didn't know how lucky I was to be able to take that class. So I took that class, had the light bulb moment, moved to New York City, and worked wine classes for free for Kevin Zraley and Mary Mulligan, and decided investment banking is fun, but wine is funner, to make up a word.
Right. Well, okay, let's go back a little bit. North Dakota, was your family in agriculture? Did you have anything to do with... restaurants, nothing.
None of that. North Dakota was because my dad was in the Air Force and that's where they were stationed at the time. But my family's always been into agriculture, either clergy or agriculture. So always really sort of close to their communities and the land. And so I've always had a big appreciation for it, but it was never wine grapes until we lived in southern Indiana and my dad bought some Concord grapes and fermented some wine in a crock in the basement that overflew its vessel and... was awful and really made a mess, but it made me aware of like fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it just became a curiosity because food was something that I was really into, food and cooking from the time I was a little kid. Nancy Drew cookbook and the...
Oh my gosh, Nancy Drew cookbook.
Wow, Nancy Drew had a cookbook?
I didn't know that either.
Ned Nickerson's Game Day Pancakes was like the first recipe I made out of that. So.
Oh my gosh. Okay,
yeah.
So there was an interest... Did your dad have an interest in wine beyond fermentation? I mean, did he?
A little bit. It was more of a curiosity, and it was during that era of you'd have the cocktail hour, or people were buying fondue pots, and then they would be like, "Well, we need to have a like a wine tasting," but it might have been Lancers, or it might have been. I remember at one point there was a big to-do around a magnum of Chianti, and it did not have the straw around it. It was like more of a serious Chianti, and they had this big party around that wine.
Amazing.
Well, that's fun. I like that a lot.
I do love that a lot. Okay, so wait, explain the clergy part.
Yeah.
So there's agriculture
and clergy. Very similar.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was a long line, and everyone needs to plug their ears for this one, of Southern Baptist ministers in my family. And of course, that at least then, and I think still, is a teetotaling religion.
Yeah.
So my grandfather was a Southern Baptist minister and Bible college educator. So last he knew, I was an investment banker, and we left it at that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I grew up Baptist as well in South Dakota. So there you go.
You know the drill. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And wine became okay for my parents once I got into the wine business because they wanted to support me. So then it was like, wine's fine, but beer and cocktails, those things are still not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But wine's okay.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. So wine's good, though.
It's special, and I think it does have that religious connotation, experience of it, aspects of wine being mentioned in the Bible. And I think it's also, and there are a lot of products that are like this, where they do connect people to their traditions and to their land and their culture. And I think wine particularly owns that. And it's especially connects to the culture of the table and the shared food experience, which is really about connecting and staying close.
Absolutely. So when you end up in this wine class, it sounds like you were already doing a lot of food. Were you cooking at restaurants or just for yourself?
I was catering dessert parties out of my sorority house kitchen for some extra money. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a good story there.
And it was actually, and I was doing really well with that. And then, had been cooking avocationally, other than I did do the blue plate specials at the grocery store. I was a cashier at a grocery store in Louisville, Kentucky, and I did the deli blue plate specials because one weekend the person that normally showed up to cook them didn't show up for work, and they were like, "Can you go make something?" So I made like smothered pork chops or something. It was just whatever was available to grab in the grocery and really quickly, and it sold out really fast. So I started cooking a lot.
I got promoted.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then in college, I was very into food, and I would, you know, I couldn't afford to go to restaurants, but I would sometimes volunteer at like Le Dame d'Escoffier tastings or whatever. So I could volunteer at a setup, break down, take things or attend things for free. And then I took an entrepreneurship class, and you were supposed to, one of the assignments was to cold call entrepreneurs in an industry that interests you. I was studying finance, but I was really into food. So I called Stephen Piles, who was a very famous chef at the time of a place called Ruth Street Cafe in Dallas. And he ended up winning a James Beard Award and writing cookbooks later. And I shadowed him for a day, and then stuck with that as much as I could avocationally until I got to New York, did the finance thing, and then jumped ship before I got addicted to the paychecks that come with investment banking.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Did you have, other than this cold call, did you have other inspirations food-wise? I mean, were you cooking out of certain cookbooks or watching...
Besides Nancy Drew.
Yeah, besides Nancy Drew. Were you watching Jacques Pepin? Like, what were you inspired by?
I watched everything that was on PBS for sure. I remember Cuisine Rapide from Pierre Frenet. For sure, Julia Child and the French Chef. My dad and I would watch Justin Wilson. Was it Justin Wilson? He was the Cajun chef. All of those. And so I cooked out of those books. I read cookbooks like novels. Like, I would read them cover to cover. But my dad worked for the Pillsbury Doughboy. So he would bring home refrigerated dough. So some of the, because that was the division he was in. So refrigerated dough is things like slice and bake cookies, of course, you know, biscuits and crescent rolls that you rolled around and made pigs in a blanket with. Mm-hmm. So those were some of the early things, all anything. And they were convenience food driven recipes. But then I had my grandparents' side of it with this big, gigantic garden. It would be called a farm, really, because it was many, many acres of farm stand type stuff. And every summer we would go there. And that's where I would learn canning and pickling and pie crusts and all of that type of thing. So it was really the bookends of convenience food cookery and then country farm to table cookery.
Wow.
That's
so Pillsbury in Minnesota?
No. So we had, there was a biscuit plant in southern Indiana.
Okay,
and then we also moved and had he worked at, for the same company in North Dallas because they had, refrigerated dough plants all over the country.
I thought our paths were continuing to cross because I went to Minneapolis and worked for General Mills, which now they're merged.
Exactly.
General Mills and Pillsbury. So
yes.
That's why I was curious. Indiana.
Got it. Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
So did you envision yourself being a chef at some point outside of the catering, the sorority catering and some of the Blue Plate specials and stuff? Did you picture yourself doing what some of these chefs did in a restaurant, or was that not a path?
I never pictured myself cooking in a restaurant, and I'm not sure why that is. I think because I didn't feel like I had the personal creativity to drive my own kind of culinary flair. That didn't really come along until the wine thing. Mm-hmm. And I did the whole wine path in the Master Sommelier before I went back and actually got a chef degree, because at that point it was cooking with wine in mind. Mm-hmm. And so the one cookbook that I've written is a book about food and wine pairing that, and it won an award. I mean, it was because it really has an editorial stance, which is that you can cook for the grape or you can cook for the wine style. Mm-hmm. And as you all know, those of us in the wine world very often will be like, I have this wine, what am I going to eat with it? As opposed to, I'm making this meal, what wine do I put with it?
100%.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you take this wine class. What was it that clicked?
Two things. Mostly, it was Rebecca Murphy's charisma and bringing to life how incredibly rich and deep this topic was, because I immediately put together, it's economics, it's finance, it's history, it's culture, it's agriculture, it's architecture. All of those things just screamed out at me, and it was so much richer than finance, which is super interesting, but it's just an underpinning. It's not an ecosystem in the way that the wine space is. So that clicked. And then also the idea of vinifera, so the grape varieties, the European grape species for which, most fine wines get their identity, I was introduced that way because I had had hybrids being from southern Indiana, and I had had natives also being from that part of the country. And then I had had other natives like Vitis muscadinia, because my dad and all their family was from the southeast, and Vitis muscadinia thrives in those climates, and so we would have muscadine wine. Mm-hmm. His cousins would bring it when they'd come visit or whatever. And so I had the first vinifera I had was a Chenin Blanc from the Texas High Plains, and she really quickly and effectively gave me the understanding of that was a pedigree that really drove great wines, and it so stood out to me. Which isn't to say that you can't make really good wines from natives and hybrids, and I think there's a big push in that direction in some places, but vinifera, I suddenly understood that this was a category of wine that, really defined the great ones.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
I know. I feel like I'm learning a lot.
Well,
I'm just going to take your class.
Well, exactly.
The class
exactly.
Of your life.
So, but you take, I'm trying to remember all the trajectory, but essentially at some point you do have a successful job in finance. You're working at Morgan Stanley. Mm-hmm. You take a champagne, or you go to a champagne Krug tasting, and then the next day you quit your job.
Yes. Yes.
So champagne
does that. Does Krug know that, like, they literally, like, one day you're drinking them and the next day you quit? Yeah.
They do. I did get to go there once when Maggie Henriquez was the CEO, and she said, I have a vintage wine for you. And it was from the year that I left investment banking.
Stop.
So, yeah,
that's cool.
It's pretty cool. But yes, yeah, so I was volunteering at the International Wine Center in New York City. And as you all know, the first American female master of wine, Mary Mulligan, was the and remains the executive director there. And she was teaching. And then we would always have these visiting winemakers. And it was at a time when wine, fine wine, had not exploded across the globe to the degree that it is now. So you could come and have a vertical tasting of champagne with Remy Krug and not pay very much to do it.
Wow.
It, because it was a marketing spend for them, and they were really trying to introduce their wines and their whole approach and their quality to the American market. And I was pouring and cleaning up the spit buckets for that class, and it just had that epitome moment where I was like, I was at the crossroads of 2 years of investment banking. You're supposed to either go to MBA school, come back to the firm, or if you decide, I'm going to do something different, some people would go do a nonprofit, some people would go into medicine. I was like, I'm going to try wine. So yeah, I walked back into the office the next day and went to the managing director and said, I think I'm going to do this this wine thing. It turned out he had a huge wine collection.
Oh, stop.
And he was Tom Colicchio's first financial investor in his fine dining restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
And you've heard of Chef Tom Colicchio, top chef, but long before that he had a restaurant in the city of Manhattan called Mondrian. And he said, oh, well, if I wish that I had had the guts to do the same thing when I was your age, because I thought he was going to be really mad at me, but...
Wow, what an endorsement.
It was cool.
Yeah. Okay, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Andrea Robinson. Back on The Good Stuff with our guest, Andrea Robinson, master sommelier, chef, television personality, and author. Okay, so you quit your job. Yep. You get the blessing. The big boss says, wow, I wish I had had the cojones to pursue my dream. So then what? What's the next day like?
Yeah. I mean, do you give 2 weeks or are you like, I'm done?
I did give notice for sure.
Okay.
I was already working or not working. Yeah. I guess it was volunteering at the Windows on the World Wine School as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was on top of the World Trade Center. And for people who know the restaurant, it was known for the view, but it was also at the time the largest wine list and wine sales, fine wine sales of any single restaurant in the country. So it was really, it paved the way for a lot of restaurants that ultimately, you know, really focused on wine and wine service. And there was the Windows on the World Wine School there. And Kevin Zraley, who started the wine list and wine program there in 1976 when the restaurant opened, was teaching that. And so you could volunteer, again, set up, break down, pour the wines. And I went and told him that I was going to leave investment banking and what should I do? And he said, well, if you really want to do the wine industry thing, first of all, I would stick with the money, kid, and don't do this, but I know you're not going to listen to me, so you need to go to Europe. So he handed me the booklet, the tasting book for the Wine Experience Grand Tasting, the Wine Experience, and said, go to all these places. And so they had phone number, fax number, and address, which is usually like a 5-digit postal code and then a town.
Yeah.
And it was at a time where the digital communications were such that it was either postcards or faxes to communicate with the wineries. So I reached out to as many of them as I could before I went, but I got a URL pass and a youth hostel card and a flight to Paris. And landed, took a 2-week intensive French course, and then went to every wine region that I could get to on public transportation in France, Italy, Spain, and Germany.
Amazing.
And and I worked a harvest at Chateau Palmer in Bordeaux and then came back in the fall with the hands as black as an auto mechanic from all the sap on the vines. You don't realize, unless you live in wine country as I have now for 20 years, that is some of the hardest work in the world.
Yeah.
And but it was amazing experience. And the thing that I learned from that, aside from tons and tons about the wines and the regions, was just how giving and encouraging and inviting people are in the industry to people who are earnest and excited, even if you don't know a thing.
Yeah.
And have nothing to offer them. And so I just have so many great memories of some of the top people of the top European estates receiving me personally and taking me seriously.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it is, it's an industry unlike any other in that regard, where it's just, you could be anywhere in the world and people welcome you and want to show
homes.
You everything. Yeah, yes.
Like literally into their homes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I've never met you.
Yes.
Come break bread,
yeah.
Have dinner, lunch.
Stay over.
Stay over.
I mean, like the Corrados at Vietti, Luciana, Corrado, she was like, you stay with us.
It's amazing.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Really? So I did. There are about 19 different church bells in that one little village of Castiglione Folletto, though, and they each ring on the hour. So you're not getting any sleep until you get used to that.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious. So you're amassing all this information. You're having this. Had you been to Europe before?
Never been.
So everything was just like bright-eyed, let's do it, mm-hmm. let's just go.
Yep.
Head first, which is a good way to do it. What were you kind of in your mind thinking as you progressed in this trip? Like, I'm going to work, I'm going to teach, I'm going to write books, I'm going to like make wine. Like, what were you thinking?
I didn't even know what jobs there were in wine at that point, other than I had been exposed to what was going on at Windows on the World and at the International Wine Center. So I knew there were wine schools and teaching options, and I thought that might be an option. But I really didn't know what tack I would take. I never thought I would end up front of the house on the floor in a restaurant, mm-hmm. though that was pretty much the last place. I thought maybe distribution, maybe PR. But mostly I was really focused on just learning a lot so that I could come back and be qualified to apply for a job that I otherwise wasn't qualified for. No experience. Wine knowledge was what I was going to be able to hope to bring to the table. So, mm-hmm.
So you come back and start working the floor.
No. So when I got back, I started stuffing envelopes at the International Wine Center for about $12 an hour. And then I got a job at Windows on the World as the wine school coordinator for $15,000 a year in New York City. So I considered
You've arrived.
I've arrived.
Yeah.
It was a paid stipend, essentially, or a paid internship, perhaps, is a way to say it.
Was that your monthly income at Morgan Stanley beforehand?
Something like that. Something like that. Yeah, it wasn't far. And so I had saved my bonuses. And so I was able to live on, you know, my savings. And that was a great decision, because that's a place where everything got opened all the time and we got to taste everything. And there was really no wine region or wine supplier that didn't come to Windows on the World to present their wines. And it was the best place in the world to be, because the hospitality mindset of Kevin Zraley, it's always been this great underpinning. Because one thing that seems to happen sometimes in the hospitality space with chefs and sommeliers is that sometimes I think people get caught up in their own role and impact. And Kevin always reminded all of us from the get-go, we're in hospitality first. Everyone who walks through that door is a customer that we are taking care of. We're honored to have them in our presence. They're not lucky to be received by us. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that. So that was a great place to learn. So I worked as the wine school coordinator, which is a glorified secretary, and then started working in the wine cellar as a cellar rat. And, you know, move pallets around, receive goods, hand out bottles, wearing a parka, 11 o'clock at night, handing out champagne. And then I could start to work the floor. You can trail the sommeliers. So I got to trail Bruce Sanderson, who was on the floor at Windows on the World at the time. For people who don't know, he's like one of the top editors at the Wine Spectator magazine. We were both working weekends as in the retail shop at the Burgundy Wine Company with Al Hotchkin and Jerry Tashjian. So we were learning all this about Burgundy wine at a time when, again, when you could afford to open it and taste it. that's kind of how I made my path ultimately to the floor and to being the wine director there. I got that promotion about a month and a half before the first World Trade Center terrorist attack. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, terrible, terrible.
So I'm just so impressed. I mean, you clearly are scrappy. I hear you're working in finance and volunteering on the side, so you're basically not sleeping at all, from what I know of my friends who have done finance in New York City. I mean, what a great path where you just jump in, stuffing envelopes, like anything you to do. And I think that's just such a great lesson for everyone. I think people don't know how to enter wine, and it basically you just start somewhere, anywhere where you have potential mentors and you have an environment where you can learn something. And I think that's just a really great takeaway for anyone listening.
It's 100% the way to go.
Yeah. And still, I would say, I mean, is that when you advise kind of or mentor younger people, is that what you say? Like, just dig in, just get in somehow.
Dig in and don't forget your whatever skill set you have, if it's crunching numbers or if it's digital or marketing, you probably have that to offer. I was bilingual in Spanish, so mm-hmm. I said I speak Spanish, so I got to be able to use that in the hospitality setting, which was helpful.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, for sure. I think we are due to take another break. We will come back soon, talk more with Andrea Robinson. Good stuff. And we were just marveling off air about, just the
everything.
Everything. I mean,
so
that time period to be in Europe, to just that age that you were, to just do it and explore so much and learn so much. So, okay, we have, you know, another couple shows worth of talking about your all the things that you have done. But why don't we just skip to the present? And what are you up to now?
So much. The probably the newest thing and the most thing that I'm most excited about right now. Well, there's two. One is a live stream that I do monthly. I'm thinking that I will be taking it to a greater frequency pretty soon. But it's called Quench, which is based on an old Food Network show that I had with Steven Olsen back in the day. So that's the name that it comes from. It's perfect. We mostly focus on wine, other beverages to a degree. Lots of pairing, and I stream it to YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And always have an in-studio guest, which technically or typically is my kitchen, but I've started to do remote broadcasts from other locations. So I'll be doing remote next week and doing skin contact wines, orange wines, and rosés. And all the episodes are available on the YouTube channel, so you can nice. Go back and check them out. And it's really fun and educational, and usually about an hour. And then the other thing is a really big docuseries project for next year called The Sipping Point. And it focuses on the fact that next year is America 250, the 250th anniversary of signing the Declaration of Independence. And it's the 50th anniversary of the Paris tasting that really kicked off such an extraordinary global explosion in wine and wine quality, and the I'd say the elevation and amplification of terroirs everywhere that people weren't really focused on outside of France and maybe Italy. And now we've realized that places like Sonoma County have the ability to stellarly execute almost every classical grape there is. Mm-hmm. But then there are specialty places all over, whether it's Malbec in Argentina or mm-hmm. Sauvignon Blanc in New Zealand. Everyone's discovering their footing and then discovering the magnet of hospitality that brings, and also the beautiful communities and agricultural tradition that upholds, and of course all the good stuff that we do. Oh, I just used your show title.
I love it.
That's all okay.
The
we
good
like
stuff,
that.
that we do for each other that come from that space. So.
Yeah, and you know, you had a history of doing PBS shows as well. Mm-hmm. So how has it been to sort of see the digital, you know, transformation of broadcast? I mean, you must be finding such wider audiences.
Yeah, it's really great because the gatekeepers are less powerful, so you can get the message and the content and the audience more easily. You have to scrap your way to it because it takes a lot more work for maybe the quote talent. But if you're willing to do that, then you have such greater opportunities, especially on the topics that we like to talk about.
Right.
Well, I would bet on you for sure to be scrappy enough to find those opportunities. So.
Yeah, given everything that brought you to this place, that's true. And then you brought some glassware.
I know.
So
what
tell
are we looking
us
at?
About that?
So many years ago, I started to, I was asked to endorse a line of grape-specific glasses because the great thing about that trend is that it taught us all that the glass does make a difference. And many people stop drinking out of the grandmother's Waterford crystal, which are lovely, but they're too small for a nice pour of wine, and they usually don't give you a good bowl, right, for a swirl and a preservation of that bouquet. So in comparing those different shapes, I realized that there are certain design principles that actually optimize all wines. And rather than having a different shape for every grape, if you get the shape right, you can make the most of almost any wine type, style, quality, age, etc. And so the glass is called The One, and it was born out of... exactly. So the idea is that they're break resistant, they optimize pretty much any wine you want to put in them, and so you can focus on investing in the wine rather than a wing on your house for your stemware, and and because wine is complicated enough, I think, for people. That's why we all have jobs. Yay! But the glass should not be so complicated.
Okay. Well, we have to take another quick break. We will come back and find out a little bit more about how people can find these glasses when we come back. Wrapping things up on today's good stuff. And so, Andrea, give us how do people find out more? How do they find the glasses? How do they find your show, your content, your books?
Certainly. AndreaWine.com is the website, and you'll find out all about the Quench show, and each upcoming episode is always teased there with links to be able to get a reminder. The glassware is also available on there, and it's free shipping like everybody we're all trained to expect.
Right.
So you can check that out.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Carissa, are you ready to talk about our Tuesday Night Wine?
I think we should jump into it.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe we put our guest on the
spot. Okay, we're going to put our guest on the spot. Thank you for sticking around for this. But every show we talk about what we might crack open on Tuesday night, and no reason to wait and hold on to your good stuff. You got to drink it. So what are you going to drink this Tuesday?
Well, I just had the chance to taste the West Slope the Pinot Noir from Donham Estate. And if people haven't been there, it is on the Sonoma County side of the Carneros Appalachian. This property is stunning.
It is.
The art collection there is transformative, and the wines are so detailed and expressive. And I love this West Slope because it has really got that Pinot Noir subtlety, earthiness, and almost crystalline purity. It's just so, so good. And I'd probably have it with something really, really simple, like a simple grilled pork tenderloin.
Okay, nice. Well...
So we're going over to her place on Tuesday night is what I basically just figured out. She's making us dinner. We're
we never think about the food side.
Yeah,
we just talk about the wine.
It's so. My job.
She just upped our game.
I know. So we'll go over there. That sounds good. I will bring a Dellinger Altamont Syrah.
Nice.
Winery celebrating 50 years this year. So that's my gift to us.
Well, in honor of your sparkling champagne moment, I am going to bring/drink the 2017 Blanc de Blanc from Jay Vineyards, because I love their Blanc de Blanc.
I do too. Great idea.
So we can start with that.
We'll start with that
and then work our way Pinot Syrah. Fantastic.
I'm down.
That's a good Tuesday night. That's a good any night.
It is.
All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us today, Andrea. And everybody, AndreaWine.com for more information. Buy some glassware. Check it all out. And from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.